The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And maybe for the next few weeks, I thought of sharing some of the teachings from the Buddhist texts that I particularly resonate with, that I like, that I find useful in my own practice, and we'll just see how it goes. I hope to make the teachings, the texts, kind of come alive as opposed to seeming kind of dry. And tonight I'd like to start with an analogy. The Buddha actually in teaching was a real master of using analogies. The analogies that he brings as descriptions of practice or descriptions of states of experience have a very evocative quality. And with the one that I'd like to explore tonight, which is the analogy of the flood, it's got a lot that we can unpack around this analogy to begin to understand something about how to practice and some things about our practice. So the flood, the analogy of the flood, is an analogy of, just think about what a flood is. I mean, it's something that kind of sweeps in and makes it hard to cross a river. The current is fast, often in a flood, and you might get swept away by the flood or pulled underneath in the current. And so the flood in these analogies that I'm going to offer is basically the analogy of how challenging our lives are. The flood of our lives, where we're caught, where we're swept away, where we're stuck, where we feel like we're drowning. And he offered a couple of different analogies about how do we cross this flood. So that's what I'd like to explore today with you. So the flood itself, the analogy of the flood itself is, it's basically, in my understanding, it is an analogy of our minds that are caught in the swirl, in the eddies, in the struggles around being caught in wanting things to be different than they are, in being reactive to the world, being trying to hold on to things that we want to keep, kind of feeling like we have to hold on to things, that we're trying to stem the tide of impermanence in a way in our lives. We get swept away by mind states of anger, confusion, annoyance, hatred, pride, irritation. I mean, there's a whole range of reactivity in our lives, and this kind of state of mind is some of what I think the Buddha, it's not the entirety of the flood, but it's a big piece of the flood that we live in. And we can feel like, I know that for myself, there were times in my life when I felt like I was drowning in depression, or just swept away by anger, just unable to focus the mind because I was so angry. And so the analogy of the flood, I think, is quite evocative for reactivity. So the meaning of the flood is essentially the forms in our mind of greed, aversion, delusion that kind of keep us caught in habits and patterns of struggle, of suffering. The Buddha, you know, it's not just unpleasantness here. The flood doesn't refer to just simply unpleasant experience, because the the Buddha acknowledged and recognized and understood that unpleasantness is just a part of being a human being. Pleasantness, unpleasantness will come and go in our lives. And it's not our fault that pleasantness and unpleasantness come and go. It's not our fault if we can't construct our lives to have it be continually one pleasant thing after another. It's not our fault if there's unpleasantness arising in our experience. It's the nature of humanness. I'll say it's not necessarily our fault if unpleasantness is arising in human experience. So what the Buddha talked about is this reactivity is kind of a rebelling against just this flow of pleasant, unpleasant, the kind of naturalness of pleasant, unpleasant experience, and essentially trying to hold on to, cling to pleasant experience, trying to push away, get rid of unpleasant experience. And the mind that's doing that is caught by this flood of greed, of wanting to hold on to things that are pleasant, of aversion, of wanting to push away things that are unpleasant, or of delusion, of being confused about this kind of state of life. Certainly for me, the place of depression was also a place of confusion. It's like, why are things like this? You know, woe is me, and you know, why can't I control my life? Well, it's part of the nature of life that it's not completely controllable. And so the reactivity around the nature of our lives, this is where the Buddha pointed to some measure of ability to begin to cross this flood. It's not that pleasant, unpleasant is going to go away, but that there is a possibility of not being swept away by reactivity to this flow of pleasant and unpleasant. And so this is the flood that is being talked about, this flood of reactivity. So two analogies. One, the simile of the raft. And I'll actually read the words of the Buddha here. They're the words from the suttas. Suppose a person in the course of a journey saw a great expanse of water, whose near shore was dangerous and fearful, and whose further shore was safe and free from fear, but there was no ferry boat or bridge going to the far shore. This person thought, suppose I collect grass, twigs, branches, and leaves, and bind them together into a raft, and supported by the raft, making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely across to the far shore. And so, the person collected grass, twigs, branches, and leaves and bound them together into a raft, and supported by the raft and making an effort with hands and feet, got safely across to the far shore. So this is just the first part of this analogy, this use of a raft to cross this flood. So the possibility, this analogy is pointing to the possibility of it being actually possible to cross this flood of reactivity, to cross over and, let's say, transform our minds from this habit of reactivity to something else, to non-reactivity. And so the analogy is talking about how do we do that? How do we cross this flood? And in this case, there's no particular easy way. There's not a bridge. There's not a ferry boat. And so we have to create something. We have to create a raft. And in this analogy, the raft, I like this business of the raft. It's like a makeshift thing. We gather things that are here, grass and twigs and leaves and bind them together and make something that floats. The raft is understood to be the path of practice, essentially. The Buddha makes the analogy or says explicitly in one place that this raft to cross the flood of reactivity is our practice. And this raft, when we think about this analogy, what do we do with our practice? You know, in our practice, we meet our direct experience. It's like whatever's here, this body, this mind, what's happening here and now. It's like we gather, we collect what's here, we meet what's here to practice with. Ajahn Sumedho, I have to credit him for giving me the idea for this talk in one Dharma talk that he gave. He said, "The Buddha referred to his teaching as a raft, which you can make out of the things around you. You don't have to make some special motorboat or submarine or luxury liner. A raft is something you make from things around just to get across to the other shore. We're not trying to make a super-duper vehicle. We use what's around us to head to freedom." So this analogy of the practice, what will we do with practice? If the raft is our practice, we use that practice to gather up what's here in our experience and meet this. We meet this breath. We meet this body sensation. We meet this sound. We meet this mind state, this frustration, this bit of anger, this confusion. And so this is where we start to cross the river on the raft. So the raft, made out of grass and twigs and branches and sticks, going across that flood. Another thing I really like about this analogy is that you think about that. Again, it's not the super-duper vehicle. It's not the motorboat. It's not sealed from the water. You are going to get wet. You're going to, you know, the raft is going to start falling apart around you. You're probably going to have to start gathering up things floating down the river to put it back together. So this sense of the practice being a practice in which we meet the river. We meet our reactivity. It keeps us from drowning in that reactivity. It keeps us, with our effort in our hands and feet, it keeps us from being swept down the river. So we have to make effort. We don't just push ourselves out on the river and then just float. If we did that, we wouldn't cross. So we have to make the effort to cross. But we're going to get wet. And this part of the practice, well, this is a huge part of our practice. As we begin to build this raft out of the things around us, part of what we're meeting is not just simple experiences of a body sensation here or there or a sight or a sound. We're also meeting our frustration, our anger, our irritation, our hatred, our confusion. And this is part of our path. It's not a mistake when our mindfulness comes in contact with reactivity. In fact, this is how we cross. This is how it transforms. And so we explore that possibility of opening to challenge in our opening to these very things that we're trying to cross, the very reactivity that we're trying to release, it's not simply, it's not like we're floating above that river. We are in contact with the river. We are in contact with the suffering. We're in contact with the pain of that reactivity. But because we've got the practice, we're not drowning in it. And this is an important piece in terms of our own practice. We see, as we begin to be mindful of some challenging situations, as we start to become aware of, well, anger, for instance, or something that has some charge to it, we can see that possibly we might be able to see that we can be mindful of something with a charge and not be pulled into it, not drown in it. So we can recognize, yes, this is the experience of anger. Yes, this hurts. Yes, I'm getting wet. This hurts. And yet we can also begin to kind of recognize, am I still afloat? Am I still aware? Do I still know that this is the human experience of anger? This is one of the simplest ways I know of to describe what it means to be mindful of our difficult states of mind, is that we know that it's happening for us, that, well, anger is happening, and this is a human experience. It happens to people. It's not just about me. So we recognize that we can know, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being that's feeling angry. And if that is the way we're meeting anger, we are afloat. We're not drowning in it. It may feel really unpleasant, but we're not caught in it in the way that, for instance, if we were to be swept away by the anger, the anger might start producing all kinds of thoughts of, this person did that thing and this person did this thing and how am I going to fix this problem, and I need to make sure that this person knows this and this so that that person doesn't know these things, and our mind is just going to kind of swirl. When we lose mindfulness, the mind goes into that kind of reactivity. And there, we are not crossing the flood anymore. We're either getting swept away or we're starting to drown in that flood. And if that starts to happen in practice, we need to learn some emergency measures. How do I not drown in this flood? And there's certain things that we can do there. So, it's useful to begin to recognize, when am I actually afloat on this flood? And when am I starting to get pulled into the vortex? When am I starting to get swept away? So that we use some skillful means that help to get us back onto that raft. So just a few skillful means. We talk about these at other times, but one of the most helpful skillful means when we feel like we're getting swept away is basically see if you can redirect the attention. Let yourself start paying attention to something else. See if you can practice, get on the raft with some other experience. Might be that you could connect with the breath, or it might be that you could put attention on hearing, or go take a walk and put your attention on your feet. That's one I used a lot when I was angry. I would just go for a walk and just notice my feet contacting the ground. It was an easy thing to connect with so that I could let go of the really strong pull to the anger. So redirecting the attention, not with aversion, but with the recognition that I'm drowning here. This is not helpful to try to be paying attention to this right now. I need to turn my attention to something that I can be on the raft with. So that's one strategy, is just redirecting the attention. Other ways to work with that might be, picking up some other practice. It's another form of redirecting the attention, such as, maybe turning the attention to metta, to loving kindness practice, to just, remind yourself that that there is a deep wish inside for well-being, connecting to just kind of our natural wish for well-being. For some, that can be available, accessible. For others, and for me, for a very long time, that was not so available. So I found the redirecting to something neutral much more helpful when I was overwhelmed. So we need to recognize when we're on the raft, when we are able to meet the flood, and when we're getting pulled into it. The other part about the analogy about the making effort to get across the river, making effort with the hands and feet, it said. So we have to engage, as I said. We have to do some work. Just simply getting ourselves on the raft isn't quite enough. We do have to engage. So sometimes we have to make strong effort. If the current is strong, we might have to make strong effort. And this might mean really connecting, really meeting something that's challenging, really kind of acknowledging, yes, this is happening, this is painful, and this is what it's like. This is the experience of anger, this pressure, this heat, this mind that feels like it's burning. This is the experience that we really like, make an effort to stay in touch with the experience. Sometimes we can do that. Other times the effort needs to be just more light. It needs to be just staying in contact. Just, it might be that in fact the current is kind of pushing us towards the other shore. And all we need to do is just with a very light touch, a few little gentle pushes here and there. And that might be that as there's a little more momentum with our mindfulness, we don't have to try to do the practice so hard. We don't have to struggle so hard to stay connected with experience, but we can simply just kind of ride the momentum of our mindfulness and know, oh, this is the experience right now. There may be times when in crossing that flood of greed, aversion, and delusion, there's much less of the obviousness of the experience of the reactivity. And so sometimes the experience can feel rather pleasant. In our practice, we can be connected to some easeful breaths, or we're taking a hike, and the experience is joyful and delightful. That too is our raft. Whatever we're experiencing in the present moment, that's our raft. We don't have to go looking for something unpleasant to be crossing the flood. So we can be just meeting, knowing that we're walking in a beautiful, on a beautiful day, and feeling the sun and feeling our feet on the ground, and just a simple kind of awareness. Sometimes in that simple kind of awareness of where our minds are just really just meeting in a very simple way what's happening in the moment, and not a lot of reactivity happening. A simple thing like the sound of a bird or the sight of a flower can be like a revelation. It just strikes us in a different way. And that too, that's almost a sign in a way, because the as our minds get more settled, more present, simple experience, it's like becomes like something that we wouldn't even notice. Like the beauty of a flower, we might just walk right past it if we're busy and thinking. But that beauty of that flower can just strike us with a depth of poignancy and delight. And that's kind of a sign, in a way, that when we find ourselves in delight of simple everyday experiences, that we're on that raft, that we are crossing that flood, that our minds have shed some of their normal reactivity. In our normal reactivity, we wouldn't notice the flower. We might not even hear the bird. And so we can appreciate at times that the journey across the flood can also be very delightful, very easeful. And that can serve, in a way, as a kind of a nourishment or a gathering of strength, because at least in my experience, this practice is not get continually easier and easier. So, you know, we have these stretches of times where we have this kind of ease in the practice, and then something comes up, and we get swept away again, or we have to meet something more challenging. And those times where we have that ease, if we can understand that as a kind of a gathering of strength, as a time of where we can rest to meet something that might come in the future, as opposed to thinking when something new arises that somehow we failed because we're no longer in that place of ease. If we can think of that ease that comes in our practice as a support for meeting something to come, then when the challenges come, we won't be taken aback. We won't feel like we've failed. And it's, oh, well, this is the next bit of the stream that I get to meet. Again, recognizing what is around us is what we're building the raft out of. So another... I'm going to come back to this analogy in a minute, but there's another analogy that I'll read to you about crossing a flood also. And this one, somebody comes to the Buddha and asks him directly about this flood analogy, basically. It says, "How did you cross the flood?" And the Buddha responds, by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood. But how is it that by neither tarrying nor hurrying you crossed the flood? When I tarried, I sank. But when I hurried, I got swept away. In this way, by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood. And so this speaks to some extent to some of the things I was talking about of, you know, when we feel ourselves get stuck in something, using some skillful means to not sink or get swept away. But the first piece I want to point to here is the inspiration that I take from this, because this story is the Buddha speaking. The Buddha is saying, when I was working to cross the flood, when I tarried, I sank. The Buddha had to experiment. The Buddha didn't do it perfectly. He got stuck. He sank. He got swept away. And so when I'm feeling like I'm getting stuck and sunk, I remember this. The Buddha, too, got stuck. So I take inspiration from that, that the Buddha didn't do it perfectly the first time. He had to learn the tools. He had to experiment. He had to try things and notice what was helpful and what wasn't. So the image, I've talked a little bit about, you know, some of the thoughts about, you know, what we might do to not be swept away or not sink. But for me, the main thing of this analogy and this image for me of crossing the stream, in this case, it's not with a raft. It's like he's crossing the stream on foot. And the notes to this analogy say that the image is meant to be paradoxical in a way, because typically if you were crossing a stream on foot, you would probably have to, you know, take a step, find a foothold on a rock, get your foothold, stop, maybe move quickly to get the other foot there, then search for the next spot. And so you kind of have to start and stop crossing a stream in actuality. And so the image, though, is one more of more continuous stepping, neither tarrying nor hurrying, not waiting here, not stopping here and getting kind of interested in what's happening here, but not lingering and moving on, but not rushing either. So not rushing past what's here, but really you have to land in each moment. And so for me, this image is one that has inspired me in terms of connecting to each and every moment of experience. With each moment, we have some body experience, some mind experience. Something right now, what's obvious in this moment? Are you aware of your hands? Are you aware of the sensation of your hips against the chair or cushion or bench? Are you aware of a breath? All of this is just a meeting of a moment of experience. We can meet something by choosing to direct our attention to it, such as the breath, or we can just kind of land in the stream of our experience, the river of our experience, and just kind of meet what's obvious. What's the most obvious thing here? And how about now? And how about now? And this image of neither tarrying nor hurrying to me is like giving every single moment its respect and its due, but also not trying to hold on to it. Because the actuality of our experience is very like a river. It is flowing on. And we can't really hold on to any moment of experience. We might like to. This one feels pretty good. Can I keep this one? No, this one feels pretty bad. Let me get past that one. And the Buddha is encouraging, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, meet it and then move on. Meet the next one and move on. When I was struggling in my practice, sometimes I would draw this image up in my mind of neither tarrying nor hurrying, right? Just this, and just this, and just this. And so this speaks to me of a very persistent kind of effort, but also one that's not tight. It's really just giving each moment its due, acknowledging, meeting every single moment. So back to our raft. So the person crosses the flood, and then the Buddha says, so when this person has gotten to the other side, that person might think, this raft has been very helpful to me, since supported by it. Oh, wait, let me get to one other piece. What is the other side? Forgot about that part of the analogy. What is the other side? The other side is essentially that freedom from reactivity, the possibility that we can meet this river flow of our experience, this what's happening moment to moment, without being swept away or drowned by reactivity. That's crossing the flood. And then the other side, the far shore, is understood to be the freedom from that reactivity. We get dry on the other side. That reactivity doesn't come up anymore. So there's not even the possibility of getting swept away anymore. The freedom from greed, aversion, and delusion. This is the far shore. And this is what the Buddha says is possible for us through our practice. That it's possible to, through meeting, and this is the interesting piece, I think, that it's through meeting the flood that we cross the flood. So it's through the meeting with mindfulness of greed, aversion, and delusion that greed, aversion, and delusion get released. And how does this work? I've spent some time thinking about this because it wasn't immediately clear to me how on earth it should work that paying attention to anger or reactivity, any kind of reactivity with mindfulness, how on earth paying attention to it would help it to release. When I first heard about this, I thought, won't that just make me more angry if I pay attention to anger? Well, my understanding through my own experience of how this works is that when we turn to our experience with this kind of mindfulness that's curious about reactivity as a human experience, not as this is I or me, and so we're curious about it. We get familiar with, oh, this is what it's like to be a human being that's experiencing reactivity. What happens there is that we very directly, very clearly, very viscerally understand this experience of reactivity is painful. This experience of reactivity is not leading to well-being. We feel the immediate consequence that it is directly taking me to non-well-being. The state itself of reactivity is not well-being. And yet what has happened before we've become mindful or before we've learned this practice of turning our attention to experience, turning our attention to this human experience of reactivity, is that our minds are caught by the ideas that if I figure out how to fix this problem or keep this thing or get rid of that thing, then I will be happy. And so we are essentially, through our beliefs, our views, our attitudes, our ideas about what's going on, we are missing that right now we are suffering, because in our minds, at some point in the future, we won't be suffering anymore because we will have fixed this problem. And so we are missing the suffering, the pain, the struggle, the non-well-beingness of the reactive state itself, in our normal way of meeting that experience. We have completely missed that we're suffering. And I actually noticed this pretty early in my practice as I was looking at anger. It's like I realized this very first practice I did was just noticing anger in my daily life. And at some point I recognized that my mind believed that the anger was going to make the other person miserable. And that's what my mind was latching on to. That somehow it took delight in the fact that this anger was going to make the other person miserable. And I was fortunate in this particular case in that I was 7,000 miles away from the other person and not in communication with this person. And so there was no way they knew I was angry, and there were no way they knew that they were becoming miserable. So it was actually pretty clear as I started paying attention to this anger. It's like, oh, wait a minute. This isn't making that person miserable. This is making me miserable. And in that moment, there was an understanding. It's like so obvious when we see it. And I had missed it. I had missed that I was miserable in this anger. And so this, to me, is how this works, that turning our attention to the reactivity begins to transform it. Because we begin to understand, our system begins to understand, this is not the way to well-being. And because our system begins to understand it, our system begins to kind of orient in a new direction. It begins to figure out how to let go of that kind of reactivity. So it's a little bit mysterious at first, but a very little bit of practice will begin to reveal just how powerful it is. And so these little tastes we get. The first time I tasted that possibility that a pattern of anger could disappear, it was a revelation to me. A little taste of that kind of freedom. A little taste of that possibility for being on the far shore. The Buddha says that it's possible to completely let go of all forms of reactivity. He says, I did it. I know it's possible. And the Buddha was a human being. This is another thing I take great inspiration from. He was a human being. And he says, it's possible. I wouldn't ask you to do it if it weren't possible. It is possible. So that's the far shore. That's where we're headed. That's this work we're doing to cross this flood, to get to the far shore. And so, having gotten to the far shore, the person might think, the Buddha said, the person might think, this raft has been very helpful to me, since supported by it and making an effort with my hands and feet, I got safely to the far shore. Suppose I were to hoist it on my head or load it on my shoulder and then go wherever I want. Now, do you think that by doing so, that person would be doing what should be done with the raft? And his followers said, no. The Buddha said, when one gets to the far shore, one might think, this raft has been helpful to me, but suppose I were to haul it on dry land or set it adrift and then go wherever I want. This is what one should do with that raft. And so then he makes the comment, the Buddha makes the comment, so I have shown you how the Dharma is similar to a raft, or our practice, how our practice is similar to a raft for the purpose of crossing over, not for the purpose of clinging. And so this is pointing to that even the practice at some point needs to be let go of. Now we have to be careful about when we do that. It's not so useful to let go of the raft while we're in the middle of the river. So, you know, this speaks to you know, sometimes how we have to hold on to practice. Sometimes we have to work really hard to practice. And sometimes people ask me, you know, well, I really, you know, I'm trying so hard, and or, you know, shouldn't I, you know, I really want to see something. Shouldn't I not want to even the practice? Well, ultimately, yes. There is that question or that injunction by the Buddha to not even cling to the Dharma, to not even cling to the practice. And yet we can't have some kind of idea like that to say, well, gee, I really want to see this thing. I'm really interested in being mindful of this, but I see the wanting there, so I shouldn't do that. We'll never get anywhere if we don't make the effort. And what I've seen in my own practice around this is that, yeah, there are times when I do cling to the practice. It's like I'm holding on for dear life to the practice in order to not get swept away by some kind of reactivity. And I understand it in this way, that while we are trying to cross the flood, we probably need to hold on to the raft. We need to cling to the raft. And so that is helping us, holding on to being mindful of something challenging, making an effort to stay present for reactivity when it's happening, and seeing perhaps even the wanting to be free of that reactivity. You know, that is helping you to release the reactivity. So there's a clinging to something. There's a clinging to something wholesome here. There's a clinging to the practice. There's a clinging to the wish to be free of that reactivity, perhaps. And yet, that is helping to release a more unwholesome kind of state. So we might be clinging to something to help us let go of something that's sucking us under the current. And it's kind of like that. There's a kind of a staged letting go, I see. So we might have to cling to the practice while we're struggling to let go of anger, or working to release some kind of reactivity. At some point in our practice, we will find that, you know, maybe we find that we are clinging to wanting to practice or wanting to make effort to get rid of something, and we are feeling the suffering of that wanting directly. So what I'd suggest is that if we're clinging to the practice in order to let go of some kind of strong reactivity, more what we're feeling is the suffering of the reactivity. And we're not so much feeling the suffering of the holding on to the practice. In fact, that's what's keeping us afloat. But at some point, maybe in those times where there's more ease, if we are like bearing down, saying, oh, I got to be present for every single moment, I can't miss anything, we feel a stress, we feel a kind of a tension, a tightness around pushing into experience, then we're probably feeling the suffering of clinging to the practice. And at that point, when we're feeling the suffering of it, that's when we start to look at that. That's when we can start to recognize, oh, this is too much effort. Maybe I should practice neither tarrying nor hurrying. Just each moment, just each moment. So ultimately, the Buddha indicates non-clinging to even the teaching. And I think this is an important piece because it helps us to recognize, you know, that the Buddha basically is saying that there's nothing is worth clinging to. That any form of clinging is going to create some kind of stress. Even clinging to the Dharma is going to create some kind of stress. And yet, that at that point, when that clinging to the Dharma is what's creating that stress, then we're just back on that flood, noticing that kind of stress. Oh, this too needs to be let go of. This too. So, it's 9 o'clock, so I need to stop. Thank you for your attention. I hope this was useful.